Hey, you ready to go, Reg? I am too. Let's just get to work, right? It's summer. We can enjoy things, but now it's time to work. So let's do that. Okay. What do you say? Cool. I'll give you the three S's and the countdown. You give me the music, and I'll give you a podcast. That's the way it's done here. So put it in the book. 373. You ready to go? Me too. All right, here we go. Star, smile strong. 3, 2, 1. Hey, it's Elton Jim Toronto, and this is Captain Pod Test. Whoops. No, that time. Here we go again. All right, try it again. We'll see what happens. 3, 2, 1. Hey, it's Elton Jim Toronto, and this is Captain Pod Testic. Now, you see what happened? You know, okay. Whatever happens, we're just going to let it go, okay? Here we go. No one's hearing this anyway. Here we go. 3, 2, 1. Hey, it's Elton Jim Toronto, and this is Captain Podtastic. And welcome to another episode of Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. Every Monday, a new episode is posted at WGNRadio.com or wherever you go to find your favorite podcast. We're there. We're right there, just waiting for you. But don't forget, listening is important. But getting out there, hitting the streets, telling your friends, telling your family, telling anyone who listens to a podcast that your favorite podcast is Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, and it should be theirs too. That's not just as important, but it's very important. So get out there and spread the word. Your loyalty and devotion, it helps me sleep at night. Don't forget, if you like what you hear, you go to WGNRadio.com, hit the prompt for the podcast section, and then you can find the prompt for this podcast. And my gosh, when you hit that, duck. Get ready, because you are going to be attacked by podcast after podcast after podcast, just sitting there waiting for you to binge and have fun and get some information. And if you're not too busy, you might learn something. That's my Bill Cosby. Thank you very much. Anyway, there's a ton of podcasts there. Just keep scrolling down and scrolling down. We've been doing this since 2016. And this is episode 373. A little housekeeping before we get started on today's topic. I don't want to say I told you so. But yeah, I think I do. I think I do, and I enjoy doing that. If you've been a listener with any kind of longevity here. I get out there and I make some predictions, and when they come true, I do like to take a bow. Thank you very much. I like to take credit. The one that I'm going to take credit for now is the prediction that I made about Wheel of Fortune a couple of podcasts ago. I talked about how the hosting job of Wheel of Fortune, currently held by Pat Sajak, apparently was the most coveted job in all the world, and certainly in show business. As soon as Sajak announced his retirement, many people were either subtly or very directly throwing their names in the ring, or throwing their hats in the ring, putting their names out there to say, hey, I wouldn't mind hosting that. Everybody who, I don't know, as I said on the podcast, I don't know if Pat Sajak, no, he had the most coveted job in the world. And if he did, would have you given it up? But in that podcast, I did predict two things and say two things that ultimately came true. Did not expect them to come true this fast, but I did predict that they would happen, or they should have happened, and they certainly did. I talked about how, while I'm not a fan of Ryan Seacrest, He would be the best host. He checks every box. He's this generation's Dick Clark. 100 jobs, doesn't offend anybody. People of both, men tolerate him, women like him. That's about, that's what you can say. Doesn't offend anybody. You don't know about his politics. You don't know anything about him, except he's got a nice smile and he can read a teleprompter very well. And he, you know, he dresses well. You know, he dresses, he's, you know, he wears the hip, cool stuff. But that's enough. That's what Dick Clark did 50 years ago. And that's why he had like a 50-year career and made a ton of money. And as I said, Ryan Seacrest followed in his footsteps. I think Dick Clark even anointed Ryan Seacrest in many ways. Gave him the hosting job of the Dick Clark's Rockin' Eves. Dick Clark's name's still on there. So I predicted that even though a lot of people were throwing their names in the ring, Ryan Seacrest's name was initially popped up almost immediately. And while I said I'm not a huge fan of his, he really would be the best choice. But more importantly than that, that was not that hard of a prediction to make. I will take credit for it, certainly. but that one wasn't too hard. But one that I will certainly take credit for, and one that I did not hear many people making, was that I felt that the smartest thing that the producers of the show could do would not be similar to what the producers of Jeopardy did, of draw this thing out for months, have all these would-be people audition from all different, you know, lines of work, comedians and hosts and sports figures and from politics and all this other stuff, and drag this out thinking that they were going to keep this, the story, give it some legs and create a buzz. It only got a little boring after a while. And then ultimately they had all these different people on and they wound up naming one of the producers. So it was all a sham. And then I think so many people were disgusted by that decision and being hoodwinked that they went and dug up some dirt on whoever that guy was. Can't remember his name anymore. And while as soon as he was named, they dug into his background. They found some controversial statements he made years ago on some little heard podcast, but that was enough to sink the guy. And he was gone. And then they finally wound up with Kevin Jennings and Mayim Bialik, who they have now. Or Keith Jennings. What is his name? Kevin Jennings? Keith Jennings? Ken Jennings? You could tell. I don't really watch Jeopardy, to be honest. I think it's Ken Jennings, right? Let me take a look here. And the old computer here, huh? It's Ken Jennings, right? Yeah, it's Ken Jennings. I think I said that right. No, maybe not. Who knows? Anyway, Ken Jennings. But that was they totally mishandled that. Jeopardy totally mishandled it. So I said that Wheel of Fortune, if they were smart, the producers, they would immediately don't go through this big rigmarole. Don't stretch this out. Even though Pat Sajak is going to be there for another year, name Ryan Seacrest now, right away. Just name him or whoever the host is going to be. I thought it would be Seacrest, but whoever it is, just name him. Boom, get it over with. Let Pat have his year of a farewell. We'll see what happens with Vanna, but name your host right now, soon. Don't drag it out. And sure enough, they did exactly that. So maybe they're listening. But good job. You did it, and don't worry. Now that just doesn't have to hang over everybody and what's going to happen, and Pat Sajak could have all of his next year and his time alone to get all his accolades and all his pats on the back from everybody in his final season, and then Ryan starts. Excellent. They handled it well. They learned from the horrible Jeopardy example, clearly. And they did it right. So congratulations to you. And I will take credit in a big I told you so on that one. So what I want to talk to you about today is very close to my heart. Just got back, in fact, from a couple of stops, final stops, on the Farewell Yellow Brick Road Elton John tour, his final huge tour that he announced initially in 2018. It was supposed to be a three-year worldwide tour. It was supposed to end in 2021, November, at Dodger Stadium, revisiting Dodger Stadium, where he initially played for the first time in 1975 for two sold-out shows that sold more than 110,000 tickets over two shows. And at the time, in 1975, was record-breaking and historic for many reasons. The stadium show at that time was not a normal thing that we see now. Look, it's Taylor Swift selling out, you know, 8-9 shows at stadiums. Back in 75, rock was huge. It was building. It was big enough and popular enough to fill arenas of 20,000, but there weren't that many acts that on their own could fill a stadium of 50 or 60,000 people. In fact, Elton John, when he did his shows in October of 1975 at Dodger Stadium, was the first act to play Dodger Stadium since the Beatles were there in 1966. So it was a while, but Elton's popularity was so huge at that time that he was one of the few artists who could fill it, not just once, but twice, two nights, two shows. And then certainly after that, rock and roll continued to grow, and the stadium show became a permanent part of the rock and roll touring landscape, depending on the size of the act. And in many ways, in the late 70s and early 80s, if there wasn't a group that on their own could fill up a stadium, or any kind of an act, group or single solo act, like Elton, that could fill up a stadium on their own, then what they would do was have several bands with these kind of dream lineups, rock or pop acts. I remember Chicago and the Beach Boys, for instance, got together in the 70s and played baseball stadiums, and Peter Frampton and the Monsters of Rock tour. Peter Frampton and other bands would, I think even the Police may have been, I don't know if they were with him or not. I remember here in Chicago at Sox Park, the old Comiskey Park, they used to have these multi-act rock outdoor stadium shows, but it took a couple of two or three bands. They were all day affairs. But Elton filled Dodger Stadium in 75 on his own and really helped pave the way for other rock acts and pop acts then to follow suit. But back then it was something very unique and very historic. So as I said, Elton's tour was announced in the early part of, I think it was in January of 2018, made a very elaborate announcement with Anderson Cooper, saying that this would be his final tour of his career. Tour. It would start in Allentown, Pennsylvania on September 8th, 2018, and it would end sometime in 2021, and ultimately was supposed to end in November of 2021 in Los Angeles at Dodger Stadium. Of course, no one foresaw COVID, which basically delayed the tour for pretty much 2 years. The tour was suspended in early 2020 and did not come back until mid-January of 2022. So literally 2 years, as the rest of the world was shut down for that long. So obviously the tour has been extended and went out 5 years, and a lot of different shows, you know, based on scheduling, shows had to be rescheduled in blocks, and ultimately, the Dodger Stadium show did take place in November of 2022, but it was not the finale show of the tour as it was meant to be. It wound up being the finale tour of the North American legs of the farewell tour. And then early this year, in 2023, he played throughout Europe, ending on July 8th, 2023, in Stockholm, Sweden. It wasn't meant to be the final show. The Stockholm, Sweden show, in fact, and this leg of the European tour that took place in 2023 was scheduled originally for the fall of 2020. So there were ticket holders here. Some people had tickets in their hand for 3 years for these shows, waiting for them. And so the way scheduling worked out, this European leg, originally set for 2020 of the fall, turned out to be the final leg of the tour. And so the Stockholm show, which was just supposed to be just another show early on in the tour, 2020, a year before the tour was supposed to end, wound up taking on very special significance and being the final show of the tour. Now, let me explain once again, because this has been misunderstood. I don't know why. I think overall people don't listen, people don't read, attention spans. I don't know what it is. But Elton made it very clear in 2018, and has made it very clear throughout this tour, that he is not retiring from show business. He is not retiring from performing. He is not retiring from recording. He is not retiring. This, yes, was a farewell tour. A tour is a city to city or country to country ongoing collection of performances from city to city that usually take a month or 2 months, 6 weeks or so, 8 weeks, and cover several cities throughout the United States or several countries around the world. They're very taxing in terms of travel and time. There's usually, you know, there shows sometimes, you know, if they're in the same city, two shows a night off, another city, another show, sometimes two nights off, depending on travel. But it's a very long and rigorous experience for any performer, regardless of their age. And Elton John now is 76. At the time when he made this announcement, initially in 2018, he was only 71. And he thought he would be done by 73 or 74. Now he finds himself at 76 because of the 2 year delay. But the whole idea of this tour, this farewell Yellow Brick Road tour, was because he didn't want to do that much traveling, and he didn't want to be away from home so much because he has two young sons, and he's had a husband that he's been with for more than 30 years total in terms of their relationship, and they wanted to have some semblance of a normal family life. He wanted to spend more time with his family. He did say initially with Anderson Cooper that I am not retiring. I am not going to stop performing. I might not perform as regularly as I currently do. And for those of you who are not aware, Elton John has been touring every year, doing between 80 and 100 shows every year since 1997. Okay? You know, that's 26 years that he's been playing 80 to 100 shows a year. He's been playing big markets and small markets all around the United States, all around Europe, all around the world, New Zealand, Australia, Eastern Bloc countries, Europe, South America, Pacific Rim, for the last 26 years. So he's been touring quite a bit. He doesn't, if you live in a major city, he hasn't, you might say, well, I haven't seen him here in many years. Well, because he didn't want to keep coming to the well. So he would play smaller markets, sometimes in the same state, but not in a big city. Like, for instance, in the Chicago area, I've seen him perform over the last 25 years, not only in Chicago proper, but also in Rosemont, in Schaumburg, at the old Sears Stadium, which now I think has a different name. I've seen him play in Moline, Illinois. I've seen him play in Peoria. I've seen him play in Joliet. So he would play small markets. I saw him play in Grand Forks, North Dakota. My point is, he's been touring for quite a bit. His sons are 12 and 10. He's been touring most of their lives, all of their lives. And now that he's getting on in age, he wants to spend some time. So he still may perform and will perform. I think it's in its blood. I don't think he can quit. But if he does return, he most likely will do either one-off shows or most likely a residency where he is at one place, not a travel. That's the thing that was the key determinant factor here of the touring. He didn't want to be on planes flying all around the world for months at a time. If he has a residency, especially, he's got homes here in the United States. He's got homes in France. He's got homes in London. So if he wanted, for instance, he could perhaps do a two-week run for a while somewhere in London. He lives in Windsor. He could easily do that and come home at night. Do a 2 weeks worth of shows over a month. Don't do a taxing pace. Don't have to do shows every night. But at least he'd be close to home. He's got a home in Los Angeles, so maybe he does some shows somewhere at a venue in Los Angeles. He doesn't have a home in New York, for instance, but he certainly could do the same thing in New York, play a smaller theater like the Beacon Theater. A lot of bands do residencies there, Steely Dan, other people. It's an excellent. I've been to the Beacon. It's a very cool smaller theater. So there are possibilities, but he's not retiring. He's already announced that he's going to be recording a new album beginning in October of this year. In 2019, before he went on this tour to do shows in New Zealand and Australia, since it's so far and he's going to be there, you know, for a month, he rented a home there because it's so far. You've got to live there and do the shows. Since he was doing that back in 2019, before he left for Australia in November, he asked his longtime lyricist, Bernie Taupin, to write him some new lyrics. So he said, well, you know, I'm going to be there for a month. I'm going to have some free time in between these shows. We're going to be living there. I might feel like writing some songs. Can you send me some? Can you write me some new lyrics? He wound up not recording there for various reasons, including then the onset of the pandemic. So he's got a full batch of lyrics that Bernie Taupin gave him almost 4 years ago. And from what I understand, Bernie Taupin may have even given him more lyrics within the last 4 years to add on to those. So he certainly has enough lyrics to write songs to. And the plan is to start recording in October. He may take some time off from performing, maybe a year or so, but he will perform again. So he's not retiring. That's all you kept seeing in these stories. Elton's retirement. Have a good retirement. Retirement, retirement. He's retiring from touring, not from recording and not from performing. It just won't be that he'll be coming to specific cities. He'll be in one city for an extended period of time, like he did in Las Vegas with his Red Piano show in the early 2000s, and then later had another successful residency in Vegas, both at Caesar's Palace and the Million Dollar Piano. I wouldn't be surprised if Las Vegas tries to lure him back. He says he doesn't want to go back to Las Vegas, but he has proven his residency there was one of the most successful residencies Las Vegas has ever had. And I'm sure they would want him back. And who knows if the offer of $50 million is given, I think he might reconsider. And once again, when he was in Las Vegas for his residency there, he would do about 4 shows a week. He'd be there for about 10 days in between his touring. Without the big tour, he could schedule 20 shows in 30 days or 15. And at the time, he would stay in a major, beautiful penthouse suite at one of the Caesar's Palace properties, first at Caesar's, later, I believe, at the Rio. And at 5 o'clock, he'd take the elevator down and when he was staying at Caesar's Palace, just take the elevator down, play for 2 hours, and take the elevator back up. In other words, a lot of options he has. And once again, his health may play a role in this too. He's 76 years old. He's in good health. He's not in great health. He had prostate cancer. He had his prostate taken out. He's got diabetes. If you've seen him walk, he's got serious knee issues. He recently had hip surgery. He should have his knees done. It's really difficult to see him walk. It's amazing. He's sitting behind the piano and he's ageless. He's like he's 21 again. But when he stands up to walk, he looks every bit of his age, if not more. So he's not retiring, but there are other aspects now. He wants to spend time with his family. He wants to take a rest. He doesn't want to be living on airplanes like he has for the last 50 years, if you think about it. He's been a ferocious touring act. Even when his career was in something of a lull in the late 70s and in the early 80s, his concerts still sold out. He's the consummate performer. He's got one of the deepest and most beloved catalogs of songs that everybody knows and so many people love to hear. And he's proven he's the consummate performer. His voice is stronger than ever, ironically. He can't hit the high notes anymore. He had throat surgery back in 1987. But he's got a lot of options. But once again, you don't know what the future can bring. So he wants to spend time with his sons and his husband. He wants to take a break. He certainly earned it. He's played over 4,000 concerts in his career. It's outrageous. But he's not retiring. So please understand that. Especially if he comes back and you read somewhere that he's going to be performing in Las Vegas, or he's going to be performing at the Albert Hall in London, for 10 shows, or he's performing at the Beacon. Oh, I thought he wasn't going to. No, he wasn't ever going to stop performing. He just wasn't going to have those big, massive, city-to-city, country-to-country tours. So that's why it was farewell Yellow Brick Road to touring, not from performing, not from recording. Okay? Okay. Now, now that that's done, let me share with you some of my perspective. Because this has been, over the last 5 years now, and it's been with that little break in the middle, but it's been a very interesting time of my life. I have been an Elton John fan since I was 9 years old, since 1973, when I first bought my first, the way I categorize it as I bought my first Elton John record, which was a 45 single of Crocodile Rock, which came out in 1973. So the fact that I went out there and spent my 89 cents at the time, whatever it was, for a 45, when I made that effort, when I wasn't just hearing a song on the radio, but actually plunked down some money to buy a record by him, that's the way I count, that's when my fandom started, and it only grew from there, and it grew more than I ever thought it would. Now, I like to go to extremes in everything I do. If I like something, I am loyal to it, and I go all in, and I've talked about that before, whether it's handymen who come to the house to fix something. If you do a good job for me and I like you and I feel that you gave me a fair shake, I will stay with you forever. I bought the same brand of car for the last 30 years. I've been married for more than 30 years. I'm loyal. When I like something, I'm discerning in what I like, but then when I pick it, I make sure I stay with it. And Elton is certainly one of those. And I'm very proud to say that I'm happy that I made a pretty good choice. There were other bands and acts at the time that were popular at that time that I could have become fans of that faded quickly. So I must have had a good year at that time. Because 50 years later, he's still around. In fact, it's 53 years. His first 54 years. His first album was in 1969. That wasn't the hit, but his second album, called Elton John, is the one that had your song on it. That came out in 1970. And so here we are in 1973. So for the most part, in terms of mainstream fame, recognition, success, he's had a 53-year career. And it's almost been a successful career from day one. When he came to the United States in August of 1970 to Los Angeles and played at the Troubadour Club at the time, and still is around, that club is still there. But at the time, it was the club in L.A., the hip club, the cool club. It was where either established acts went to hang out and play, or up-and-coming acts went to be seen and heard by the music industry people as well as the public. James Taylor and Carole King used to play there. The Eagles used to play there. Linda Ronstadt, anybody. Anybody was anybody from the 70s. If you read about the baby boomer 70s singer-songwriters, they'll all mention that they played the Troubadour. And so Elton was brought over from England as a relative unknown. And literally overnight, and that's not even an exaggeration, he was an overnight sensation. After his first show, he did four shows at the Troubadour. After his first show, he got a glowing review by Robert Hilburn of the Los Angeles Times. And his life and career was never the same. He went from a relatively unknown to a star on the rise to then, a year and a half later, having a number one album. The first of seven consecutive albums at number one in the United States. Started with Honky Chateau. Ended with Captain Fantastic in 1975. Number one albums. Oh, no, I'm sorry. Rock of the Westies in 1975. Captain Fantastic and Rock of the Westies were the first two albums in history to ever enter the Billboard charts at number one. So he's had quite a career. And you could argue that as he stands here today at 76 years old, his popularity in many ways may even equal or have surpassed the crazy frenzy of success that he had from pretty much 72 to 76, a good 4 years. Even his album in 76 that did not reach number one was at number three, Blue Moves. So, you know, it wasn't as if he was falling off that much. And if it wasn't for a combination of him admitting he was bisexual, which shook the world at that time in 1976, to admit you were bisexual, that was not something that you did. It wasn't like today where people are able to freely talk about their sexual orientation. That was a huge story that did have ramifications, especially here in the United States, which was still very conservative. But then at the same time, he also had to battle Stevie Wonder's Songs in the Key of Life, which is one of the great albums of all time. And that's what basically kept Blue Moves out of the top spot. But still, it debuted at number three and stayed there for several weeks. But my point is, he's had a 50-year career, and I've been with him not from the very beginning. I was too young at the time to have. I guess I could have, but I did. I wasn't aware yet. I was buying records. I was listening. And I remember when I bought his Greatest Hits album in 74 and I put it on, I heard some of the early songs and I went, oh, wait a minute. I've heard these songs. I didn't know that was him because his voice was very different all the time on songs, which is another reason why he was so interesting in his heyday there in the 70s. His songs just didn't sound like any other songs on the radio. And his voice was always different. He had a great falsetto at the time, which I still love. That falsetto of those high octave, the way that he used to just in the middle of a verse go high and low. The different time signatures in the songs. There was so much. It, obviously, visually, with his costumes and his flamboyance, he was the whole package. First time I saw him perform, like I said, now I became a fan in 1973, but I was still too young to go to concerts. There's no way my mom and dad were going to let me go to a concert, certainly not by myself, and they didn't want to go. So the first time I ever went, though, my mom did take me, though, when I was a little older, when I was 12, was in 1976. Which was a huge tour for him, one of the most successful tours at the time. At that time, I had no idea that at that first show I saw in 1976, that almost, 47 years later, I will have seen 215 Elton John concerts in the next 47 years. No way could have I predicted that as a 12-year-old. No way would I have predicted I would have traveled throughout the country and to countries around the world to see him perform. No way. Never could have predicted that when I was only 12. No way I could have ever predicted that in the next 47 years, that I would have met him personally one-on-one 4 times. No way that I would have ever predicted that he would dedicate songs to me by name at concerts 2x. Or that he would mention my name from the stage and acknowledge me from the stage more than 12 times. It's been an amazing journey. It's been a major, major part of my life. And so when this tour was announced in 2018, as I said, even though there was the possibility, and still is right now, that he will still perform, so the chances are I will see him perform again. But once again, you don't know. You don't know. He might get used to domestic tranquility. His health may play a factor. You don't know. So yes, there's certainly a stake in the ground here. As it stands right now, for the first time in 47 years, I don't know if I'm going to see Elton John perform again. There are no tickets on sale. There are no tours planned. I don't have any tickets in hand. I don't know. And so this last tour has been somewhat bittersweet, and it's been a swirl of emotions. It's been very interesting. Initially, when it was announced, among the first shows of the tour, I went opening night on September 8th, 2018, in Allentown, Pennsylvania, on the first show of the last tour. And it was emotional because at that show, there was the beginning. It was the first acknowledgement that this was the beginning of the end. And even though the tour was going to, you know, go on for 3 years at that time, it wound up going on for 5 because of COVID, but at that time it was going on for 3 years, even though I was very confident that I would see him many times on that tour, which I did. Ultimately, I saw 36 shows of the Farewell Yellow Brick Road Tour. 36 shows over the 3 years that it was up and running. 2018, 2019, 2022, and, you know, well half of, you know, basically 3 years, because it wasn't until September of 2018 when it started, and it ended now in July. So that's a half and a half. So it was 3 years of literally touring. 330 shows he performed total. I saw 36 of them in 5 countries. The United States, United Kingdom, France, the Netherlands, and his final 2 shows in Stockholm, Sweden. Throughout this tour, the Farewell Yellow Brick Road Tour, the final tour, I saw him perform in Los Angeles and Detroit and Chicago and New York City, in Minneapolis, in Lincoln, Nebraska, in Watford in the United Kingdom, in Milwaukee, in Paris, in Stockholm, in Allentown, Pennsylvania, in Philadelphia, in Indianapolis, in Milwaukee, in Oakland, in Anaheim, in Cleveland, and in Boston. Many times there were multiple shows in those cities. He returned to some of those cities many times, including Detroit and Chicago and Los Angeles. The first show was very emotional because, as I said, it was a realization of the beginning of the end. And many of the early shows on this tour in 2018, the people were showing their gratitude, their 40 and 50 years worth of gratitude to him. And it was very interesting. He was saying how this is going to be his last tour, and he was just getting in the swing, but you could see that there was a realization in his mind that this was the end. And he would get, at some shows, he would get very emotional. To the point where he would break down. He would be thanking the fans and he'd have to stop. And you could see him physically sobbing or trying to contain himself. And then the fans, of course, would continue to shower him with even more applause. I always knew what was, it was an interesting tour because even though it was farewell, for many people it was. They would see him one time, it was the last time they would see them. I knew that I was not, that every show was that I went to would not be my last. So I was not, I mean, there were some shows where I was taken over by emotion. There's no question. Because of the way he was reacting, the way the crowd was reacting, or what happened at some of the shows. I'll never forget a highlight of my life was at Madison Square Garden on October 19th, 2018, once again toward the beginning of the tour. He dedicated a song to me from the stage at Madison Square Garden. I was completely taken aback. It was like I got hit by a lightning bolt. I've played the audio from it. In fact, you know what? Why don't I do it right now for you? I think I can do it. Why not? Wasn't planning on it, but it only makes sense, right?
There's so many people there tonight, here tonight, who are my friends. There's one person I want to dedicate this song to because I've been talking about you guys out there. This guy from Chicago has been to so many shows. He's one of the loyalest fans in the world. I've never dedicated the song to him, but tonight I'm dedicating this to Jim Tirano. This is for you, baby. There's so many people.
How about that? I still get goosebumps. October 19th, 2018. I couldn't believe it. I was sitting in the front row. I had been singing along with Elton the whole show, doing my air piano as I usually do, egging him on to keep playing more and harder. And there is no way in hell I ever expected him to give me that dedication. And I was overcome with emotion, obviously, at the time. And still am. And he dedicated another song to me last summer at Watford, where he played in England, and he grew up near there, and that was his favorite soccer team. He owned it at one time. He's the president emeritus. Very special concert. I had written, he had gone back there and done in the 2000s, early 2000s, he had done some benefit concerts for the team. And I wrote the official programs for both of those shows in 2005 and 2015, or 2010. And and he dedicated a song to me last summer there. And for, so to have him to dedicate a song once again in a stadium, in a place that was very special to him, made it even more special to me. And to have done that at Madison Square Garden, not only one of the most famous venues in the world, but his favorite place to play, and the fact that he did that, I still don't know how to process it, really. As I said, there's no way that that little kid who bought Crocodile Rock in 1973 could have ever imagined that this performer, who for so long, before I ever saw him in concert, for 3 years, really lived as just an image on album covers, in magazines, and on television. And here he was dedicating a song to me and just to me. It was quite a moment. It still is quite a moment. And that happened on this farewell tour. And I think as the tour went on, he began to realize and see how many people these shows kept selling out. They were adding more shows. And there, believe me, folks, a lot of people say, oh, well, you're the biggest fan, you know, the biggest Elton John fan. No, no. I have met fans from around the world, literally. And there are fans who share the same passion that I do. Many have been to more shows. I've been to 215 Elton John shows. There are people that have been to more shows. There have been people that have been to 178 shows, like my friend Wayne Martin. There's somebody that I understand has been to 500 shows. Somebody that's been to 300 shows. I know somebody that's been to probably more than 250 shows. Elton John has nurtured and attracted a huge and a deeply loyal following. And they're everywhere. And I've been lucky enough to meet many of them along the way, from city to city, town to town, country to country. And it's always been a very special occasion. What's been so cool about having traveled to so many cities and so many countries over the last 47 years and seeing Elton perform is that wherever I would be, especially now because of social media, people, you know, they follow you, they can see what you look like, they know what you're doing, you post things. There have rarely been, I could go to a foreign country. I just did. I just came back from Stockholm. And there were people that came up to me and said, Jim Toronto, wow, it's great to see you in person. It's great to meet you. When I went to Paris recently, same thing. Several years ago, I mentioned before, I went to Grand Forks, North Dakota, about as remote of a place as you could go to do a concert. And I was standing in the concourse and someone came up to me and said, Jim Toronto, how you doing? So I've never felt alone in all my travel. Sometimes my wife has come with me, but many times, for the most part, I've gone on my own. But I've never really felt alone because the Elton John community is huge and it is very embracing and welcoming. And so to all those people that I've met along this yellow brick road in the last 47 years, thank you for making me feel welcome wherever I've gone. Some of the people I would consider some of my best friends I met because of our shared interest in Elton John, people that I never would have met, lived in other states around, across the country, around the world. I never would have met these people. But we shared a common bond. We met because of our interest in Elton's music and performance. And not only did we share that interest and that passion, but with many of these people, we wound up finding we had other things in common too and became very good friends to the point where we would visit them and vacation with them. Aside from any kind of Elton activities, just as friends. People like Tom Stanton and Wayne Martin and Alan McCormick and John Higgins, among the longest that I've known through my Elton experiences. As I said, I've met Elton four times. I came to know and interview and meet and be quote-unquote friends with many of the most important people in his life and career, including most of his band members like Davy Johnstone and Nigel Olsen and John Mahon. and Bob Birch and Guy Babylon and Bernie Taupin, his lyricist, who I interviewed twice, and Gus Dudgeon, who was his fantastic, the late Gus Dudgeon, who was his fantastic producer. I've been on television several times because of my Elton fandom. You can go online on YouTube, look up Elton Jim on VH1. There's about a 10-minute vignette from a show that was called Fan Club about major fans that was on in 2001. That shows a lot of my memorabilia, and he shows me going to concerts and basically summarizes a lot of my fandom. I was on a show, a national show called Collector's Call, that showed my collection. I've been interviewed, I've written stories, I've been interviewed on different TV shows and for different articles. I've written 8 of his official programs from 2003 through 2009. 8 different programs for different tours in the United States and internationally, specific concerts as well as major concert tours. That was always a goal. I wrote liner notes for an album by his longtime guitarist and music director, Davey Johnstone, and a former band member named John Jorgensen, who turned out to be a very good friend of mine through his association with Elton. Still talk to John, one of the greatest musicians out there. I wrote the liner notes for an album of theirs called Crop Circles. I always wanted to write some liner notes for an album. I would have loved to have written one for an Elton album. And there's always that possibility, fingers crossed, right? But I did write one for the John Jorgensen, Davy Johnstone album called Crop Circles in 1999. So this association, this Elton experience, has not only been fulfilling because it's been my passion, but even from a professional standpoint, from so many of the personal and professional goals and dreams that I had, I've been able to realize them through this, through my media career and my writing career, the acknowledgement. I have handwritten letters from Elton to me, thanking me for my loyalty, which are prized possessions. I have many pieces of memorabilia, pinball machines. It's been quite a journey. It's been quite a ride. And these concerts, as I said, were interesting in the swirl of emotions that they elicited. Early on, they were this sense of, okay, well, this is it. But then as the tour continued, it just became something that was seemed to be ongoing. And then, of course, COVID extended it. And so it never really felt like it was going to end, because it was the last show was so far in the future, and I knew I would see him again, and I knew I would see him again. I reached my 200th show of my life during this final tour in Detroit. I had it planned to be in Chicago, but the way the shows were rescheduled after COVID, the Chicago shows wound up coming before the Detroit show, and so 198 and 199 were in Chicago, and then 200 was in Detroit. No less exciting. And Elton gave me a shout out on my 200th show. He gave me a shout out on my 198th show. He gave me shout outs at many shows that I was. I always have my sign. The first time I ever had a sign, you'll see, at Elton John shows during this tour, people were starting to put up signs with the number of concerts that they had attended. And you saw some impressive numbers. some 30, 40, 50, some in their hundreds, as I said, many, some in the high hundreds, almost 200, a couple of them in the 200s, like myself. But I will take credit for this. I told you at the beginning of this show I like to take credit when I do something. Back in 2013, I went to my 150th show. And here in Chicago, as it happened to work out. And so I had a sign that said, 150th show, Jim Tirano from Chicago. And Elton recognized me and said, thank you, 150 shows, that's amazing. My goal was to hit 150 shows by the time I was 50. 150 by 50 was kind of my little slogan for that. You know, I am a PR guy. And I made it. But I believe I did start the sign thing. I will take credit for that. Nobody was bringing signs to concerts like that with the number of shows they went to. I believe I was the first one in November of 2013. I think I started a trend. Because then I started to do that more often and more often. I think people started to see it. And then when I started to get acknowledged, then I thought, well, wait a minute, I want to show how many I have. So I'm going to take credit for that one too. I had assumed that the last shows I would see of this tour would be in Paris. I saw the three shows that he did at Dodger Stadium in November of 2022. And I said, well, I'd like to see him at least one more time, you know, before it ends. And so I said, well, Paris has always been a favorite place of his to perform. I've never seen him perform in Paris. It's always a very special place for him, is just as Madison Square Garden in New York is, just as England is for him. Paris, he has a home in Paris. He lives in Paris, in Nice. It's always been a very important part of his career. He recorded many of his albums there, including some of his best, like Honky Chateau and Don't Shoot Me, I'm Only the Piano Player. And of course, Goodbye Yellow Brick Road was recorded in France. Started to be recorded in Jamaica, but the recording studio there was not up to par, and they went back to France, and that's where Goodbye Yellow Brick Road was recorded. And then he did some other albums later in his career, like The One, also in France. So France is a very important part of his career, too. And so I thought that would be cool to see him in Paris. It's a special place for him. And that was in late June, the 27th and 28th of June. And I thought, well, that would be a nice way to end. You know, I don't know. Stockholm, you know, as I said, was an accidental last show of the tour. It wasn't planned that way. There was no big significance to Stockholm in his career or anything like that. So I thought, well, Paris is, you know, maybe a week before the end. So that would be a fitting way to see him and the last time on this tour. So made the plans and we went to see him. He gave me a shout out at the Paris show. At one of the Paris shows, which was nice. So I felt very complete at the time. They were very emotional and excellent shows. And so while I was there, I felt, okay, this is okay. This is a good way to go out on this. Until I got home. Until I got home, and then reality set in. And everybody asked me, are you going to go to Stockholm? Are you going to go to Stockholm? Are you going to go to Stockholm? Are you going to Stockholm? All the fans and other people, even some of the band members, are you going to go to Stockholm? And I said, well, you know, I really don't think so. But then the reality of it, the finality of it was beginning then to really hit me for the first time since 2018. The finality of it, that this could be the last time I see him. There's no guarantees. I went to the first show on September 8th, 2018. So how could I really not go to the last show on July 8th, 2023. Right? And so even though I came, and many people that I knew, they stayed in Europe because, you know, why would you travel that far? I honestly did not expect to go to that last one. I came home and then I said, okay, wait a minute. And I looked for airfares and for cheap hotels, and I looked to see if I can get tickets. And so I was barely home a week from Paris, and I was back on another 9-hour flight to Stockholm. And when I got there, the people that, some of these longtime friends and fans that I know said, we knew you were coming. How could you not come? And I said, you know, maybe I was just fooling myself as well. Because it sounded crazy to come back. And as I said, I didn't feel that it was going to be, it wasn't like the big pomp and circumstance of the Dodger Stadium show. There wasn't any big significance to the Stockholm shows, except that they were the last shows. But my gosh, am I glad I went. People from all over the world, major fans that I hadn't seen in a long time, did come to that show. People from Australia, people from Dubai, people from other states around this country here in the United States, and people from England. Major, major fans like myself who all felt the need to be there to say goodbye to Elton that one last time. And as crazy as it sounded, and as irrational as it was to go back after I'd just seen him a week before, to get back on a plane and fly back. I just gotten over my jet lag from the Paris trip. But I'll tell you, I am so glad I went. There really was a closure. There really was a real ending. The shows were very emotional, especially the last one. And on the last show, I did get up to the front of the stage. I had my 215 sign that I flashed to Elton. I made eye contact with him many times, and he gave me smiles and nods, as he often does. And then he once again gave me a shout-out from the stage to thank me and many others that he gave a shout-out to for our years of loyalty and all the shows that we've seen, similar to the way he said in the New York one that I played you. And then the show ended, and it was funny. I hadn't really been hit with any real emotion at the Paris shows. So maybe in the back of my mind, I knew that I was going to see him again, even though I didn't know I was going to see him again. The first show on July 7th in Stockholm, I really wasn't overly emotional, but I did notice when he played your song, which is the second to the last song of the set, I got hit with a little jolt of emotion. And it shocked me, because I hadn't been feeling anything before that. And so, but it wasn't overt. I wasn't bawling or anything. I just felt a little tinge of emotion. I didn't cry per se, but I just felt a little jolt. And Elton was certainly, he showed much more emotion. He, you could tell he was genuinely touched by the outpouring of love and loyalty that he's been gaining on this tour throughout the last several years. There's no question. And he genuinely thanked people. But he hadn't broken down like he did early in the tour. I don't know if he was fighting it. Maybe he felt he didn't want to look like... Because he was very adamant in that he had no regrets about this decision to stop touring and spend more time with his family. So perhaps he was fighting that just to show that he was not sad or regretting his decision to make this his final massive tour. But instead, he was looking forward to it, appreciative of the loyalty and the years that his fans have given him, but also content with his decision. So that first show on July 7th wasn't overtly emotional, and it was a hell of a show. The band was really performing at a high level because it was emotional for them too. He's had this same band more or less since 1997. Sadly, two members passed away in the last 27 years, Bob Birch and Guy Babylon. But he's had this same band pretty much intact. Nigel Olsen rejoined in 2000. And it really is a very high quality, one of his best stage bands, touring bands ever, no question. With the addition also over the last couple of years with Ray Cooper again on percussion. So it was emotional for a lot of people. Many of the people in Elton's crew have been working with him for decades. More than that, 30, 40 years. Once again, nobody knows what the future may bring. There's hopes and expectations, but there's nothing in concrete right now. Everybody's kind of in limbo. Maybe Elton himself is in limbo. Who knows? The final show, you could feel, had some gravitas to it. Elton hugged his longtime stage manager before he went on. He took a deep breath. He made mention that this is the last show, so let's really make it a great one. He did give that extra. You could see all the band members. It was as I was watching it, it was dawning on me, is that, okay, is this the last time he will play Rocket Man? Is this the last time he will play Don't Let the Sun Go Down on Me? It could be. It could be. Is this the last time he will play your song? Probably not. Live for an audience? Probably not, but you never know. There was a finality to it that hung over it, and everybody in the auditorium knew it and felt it. And when the show was about three quarters over and he began the band introductions, that's when it hit me. That's when it really hit me, and I really got very emotional. And because I know a lot of the guys in the band to some extent, and I'd become friends with them over the last decades. And I'd seen them perform. How many times? Certainly Davy Johnstone, 215 times. He's been at every, almost, well, no, I shouldn't say that, because in 1980 he wasn't on that tour. But, you know, more than 200 times. And I've come to know them and interview them and talk to them and spend time with them socially. And especially enjoy their talents on the stage. So it really started to hit me. When he introduced each one, I started to really well up. And then as each song, at that time, then there's only about maybe seven or eight songs left. And after each song, I was wondering, okay, is this the last time he's going to play I'm Still Standing? Is this the last time he's going to play Saturday Night's Right for Fighting? Is this the last time he's going to play Crocodile Rock? Is this the last time he's going to play Don't Let the Sun Go Down on Me? Is this the last time he's going to sing your song? Is this the last time he's going to sing Goodbye, Old Brick Road? And then it really hit me. And then, of course, when he said my name and thanked the fans before the last song of Goodbye, Yellow Brick Road, before he finished and then left the stage, it was pretty tough. It was exciting and thrilling and sad, but it was sad not in a depressing way. It was still sad in a happy, triumphant way, if that makes any sense to you. And I look at it now, I'm so glad I went to those two shows. I'm so thankful and that he made such a generous gesture and gave me a shout out at that last show. And it really did bring things to a closure, and it really did come full circle. And I couldn't help but thinking of friends who have passed who were big Elton fans, who I always bring with me to each show, like Alan McCormick. And certainly, I'm always thinking of my mom, who brought me to my first show, who knew how much I loved Elton John and made sure that I was there when he came to Chicago that first time, that I was old enough, I guess, to see him. In fact, one of my favorite songs always has been, long before it became beloved over the last 20 years after it was in the movie Almost Famous and became much more popular. But one of my favorite songs has always been Tiny Dancer. And my mom passed away. It will be 17 years this year, in a couple of months in September. And the song and the line that really sticks with me and has had new meaning for me over the last 17 years since she passed is the line in Tiny Dancer that says, "Now she's in me, always with me." And so whenever Elton sings that song, and he always does, but when he sings that song in concert and when he sings that line, I always just look up and smile and say, "Thank you, Mom." Because I'm at the spot, at that point, I'm thinking of my mom. She's with me there. And I think of that time she brought me to that first concert. Probably didn't want to go, but knew how much it meant to me. And she is in me and always with me. And I do feel very close to her when Elton sings that line. So I will miss that experience. In fact, I wonder if many ways that was why I went to so many shows in the last 17 years. Because I enjoyed that moment when he sang those lines because of what they meant to me. And in that space, it reminded me of my mom, and we were together at the concert, at that first concert. Every time I go to an Elton John concert, wherever I'm at, whether it's in Grand Forks, North Dakota, whether it's down the street in Chicago, Illinois, whether it's thousands of miles away in Stockholm or in Paris or in Amsterdam or in England. Oh, and I forgot to say, I also saw him in Prague too. Not on this tour, but I have seen him perform in Prague. So the Czech Republic. So I've seen him in 6 countries overall. Wherever I'm at, when he comes out on stage, I always say to myself, this is exactly where I want to be right now. And that's a cool feeling to know that you are in the exact spot where you want to be. We have so often we don't have control of our lives, or so often we don't have control of what we want to do or where we are. And at least for me, 215 times, whether it's been around the country or around the world, 215 times I have been exactly where I've wanted to be. And I thank Elton John for that. He's gotten me off the couch. He's allowed me in many ways to go and do things. One of my favorite phrases is a line by Leonardo da Vinci called, "We must do." And he certainly did. And that has been a guiding thought for me. We must do. And part of the reason I've gone to so many concerts is because of that. We must do. Elton concerts have gotten me off the couch. They've gotten me to do things, to follow my passions, and to have few regrets. Instead of saying, "Wouldn't it be cool if?" I say, "It was cool when." And so it's been an interesting relationship. It's been an interesting obsession or passion, whatever you want to call it. But it's been a major part of my life. And I wouldn't be who I am without it. I have been influenced quite a bit by Elton in many ways, personally and professionally. And I don't know who I would be, perhaps. I don't know. It'd be interesting. I was so young at the time that I think there's no question that the influence of Elton John's persona and music and philanthropy and other things, just like any other influence you have early on in your life, helps define you. So I think in many ways who I am today is in part to my passion for Elton John, my fandom, my obsession, whatever you want to call it. It's there, it's real, it's been a part of my life, and I'm happy for it. And so, yes, there is some finality of it here. It was bittersweet. I have hope and optimism that I will see him perform once again sometime soon, perhaps. Who knows? But if not, I have great gratitude and great thanks that he shared his talent with the world and he gave so much of himself to his fans and his admirers in terms of touring and in terms of sharing his talent and so much music that he has put out, more than 30 albums over a 50-year career. It's been quite a ride. It's been quite a journey. It's been quite a roll, a walk down the yellow brick road. I hope it isn't over. But if it is, I'm glad that I was there when it ended. And I look for new passions to explore. But I will always have that passion as part of my life. And so I simply say thank you to Elton John for playing such a major part in my life, for helping me explore the world, experience the world, experience people that I never would have met, and for helping to become the person that I am. Thank you, Elton. And so ends another episode of Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. Every Monday, a new episode is posted at WGNRadio.com or wherever you go to find your favorite podcast, we are there. And don't forget to tell your friends, tell your family, tell anybody who listens to a podcast that your favorite podcast is Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, and it should be theirs too. Your loyalty and devotion are much appreciated. Hope you enjoyed episode number 373. I'm Jim Tirano. I ain't here on business. I'm only here for fun. You've been listening to Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, from the end of the web to your screen.